The Mike Lupica Podcast.
New York Daily News columnist and best-selling author.
Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody wants everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Before we chat with John Barry, I want to let you know that today's show is brought to you, as always, by Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. Welcome to this week's Mike Lupica Podcast. Anybody who ever followed me when I was still doing a radio show knows that I have been an unbelievable John Barry fanboy from the first time I heard him do any NBA commentary. I call him their Collinsworth at ESPN. I'm not sure that the powers that be have figured that out. He is mostly with ESPN Radio on NBA games. But the other night, in a stroke of good fortune for him and for this podcast, he was sitting next to Mike Breen when stuff happened with Charles Oakley that people, even in outer space, have heard about by now. He is the son of Rick Barry. He played for, I think my math might be slightly off, 17 NBA teams, and including the Syracuse Nationals, where I grew up in Central New York. He joins me now. Hey, John.
How you doing? I think it was only 9 teams. Stop.
I have the number has in a rabbit-like way grown exponentially, but only in my hands. All right, John, so there you are. You're filling in for Jeff Van Gundy the other night, and thank God he wasn't there because he would have ended up holding on to Charles Oakley's legs, okay? So the game starts sweet as you please, and tell me the first moment you knew something untoward was happening.
I think it was towards the late end of the first quarter. Porzingis was going to the hole, and I look over to my left, and I just see I saw somebody fall, and I thought it was Dennis Rodman, because I saw the top of Charles Oakley's head. Now that we know it's Charles, and it's gray, so I thought it was kind of a colored head, and so I thought it was Dennis Rodman. I did, and I thought it was Dennis Rodman's just drunk or whatever, and tripped right behind where Dolan's sitting.
Right.
So Oakley, he stands up, and now I see that it's him. So at the same time as Porzingis goes in, he gets fouled, and Mike Breen starts elbowing me, like, do the replay. I'm like, no, Charles Oakley's over there, and there's a bunch of security around him, and I want to know what's going on. And I totally tuned out the game, and I was like, I was mesmerized, and I was taken aback about what I saw, you know, a bunch of security around Oakley, and then I thought I was at fight night at the Garden. Every time you could hear the oohs and ahs of he poked the guy in the head and everybody's ooh, and then a shove and then ah, wow, ooh. I mean, and it became a fiasco. And then I looked over, saw Phil Jackson stand up and was motioning like, is that Oakley? I could tell he was asking, is that Oakley? And then it went from there. They got him out of there.
You know, we're talking to John Barry on the Mike Lupica Podcast, and, you know, it's funny. The old joke was, I went to a fight and a hockey game broke out, okay? Mm-hmm. But this one, you went to a Clippers-Knicks game the other night, and the Knicks broke out. John, you can't make up things like this. And you know, you grew up not just in a basketball family, but you know, your father is part of the royalty of the sport. So you love this game in ways that even I, who love it, can't possibly understand. To see this organization become a league-wide joke has to be very saddening to you.
It's terrible. I mean, the Kardashians would be proud of this right now. They could pop this on their reality show, and it would be great TV. It's really unfathomable that this franchise could have these things happen to them. I mean, when you talk about the NBA, I mean, the Knicks are the history of the NBA. They're right there. I mean, I know they're not the championships, you don't have the championships of LA and Boston, but man, it's, you know, the Knicks, Philly, Boston. I mean, those are the teams that I grew up. Those are the only ones that I knew were even in the Eastern Conference. I mean, it was Christmas Day, the Knicks, and to be where they are now, to have Phil Jackson just sending cryptic tweets about his superstar player and no communication, and they're a mess. It's an absolute mess. For them to be worse off now than they were last year, I would have never thought it.
John, I looked it up, and I've written this over the last few years. Over the last, I think, 16 seasons, only the Minnesota Timberwolves have lost more basketball games than the Knicks have. You know, it's almost impossible to process. But if they don't make the playoffs this year, and who knows what can happen? I mean, the bottom of the Eastern Conference is like a dumpster fire, okay? If they don't make the playoffs this year, it will mean that since they went to the Eastern Conference Finals against the Pacers in 2000, in 17 years, think about this, John, they have won one playoff series. One. Wow. In this, and you're right, this is the Knicks. Pete Hamill, the great Pete Hamill, once said that the old Knicks were the Count Basie band of basketball. They weren't just another championship team. They established the standard of class and grace and teamwork and professionalism, and now they've turned into pro wrestling.
So one playoff win in 17 seasons is just...
Yeah.
Remarkable. And how many times have they been?
I mean, they've been like a half. No, I think it's like a half. They went one time under Isaiah. I forget the exact. It's like four or five times. And I'll give you another one. Since you brought up Phil Jackson, who apparently is blaming everything except the great Chicago Fire on Carmelo Anthony. Since Phil and Carmelo have been together for these three seasons, the Knicks record is 71 and 147, okay?
Oof.
That's 76 games under 500. You want to know what Carmelo's record was in the three seasons in New York before Phil Jackson got there? 127 and 103. 24 games over 500. So somebody must have been playing some pretty good ball, John, the year that they won 54 games and Carmelo was third in the MVP voting.
That was Mike Woodson's team, wasn't it?
You bet. And that's, by the way, this is a slight digression. How does this guy never get a call when a job opens up in the NBA? Not only a great gentleman of the sport, but the only guy in this era who gave the Knicks any success.
Well, you know, it's the buddy system, and who knows who gets hired and fired. It's a joke. But, this is, like I said, to go even further down than what they were last year is surprising, but it all goes back to bad ownership. And when you don't have stability at the top, you don't win. Terrible owners create terrible teams, and we see it in every sport. And this guy, the hirings and firings that he's had, I mean, look, Melo's had, what, five coaches if you count Kurt Rambis?
Well, you guys, John, you guys had that awesome graphic the other night during the game. I know you saw it because it goes up while you guys are talking about it. I think that what the numbers were, four men have run the basketball operation since Carmelo got there, five coaches, and the most damning one of all, 80 teammates.
Well, so I'm not going to sit here and say Carmelo Anthony is the reason why this is happening. They knew the type of player they were getting, Carmelo Anthony.
Yep.
Phil Jackson knew the type of player that he was when he signed him to the big deal. He should have not assigned him if he didn't think that he could mold him into whatever he wants. I don't know what Phil's doing. I really don't. I mean, has he put the monsters of the Midway around him right now? I mean, like, are you kidding? Who does he have? We're playing Hernan Gomez. We're playing Kuzminskis. You're playing Justin Holiday. You're playing guys that have never even played in the NBA.
Right.
And expect this to happen. You bring in Joe Kim Noah, who probably has more 0 point games than he has scoring games. He's $72 million. You know, I think Derrick Rose has played fine. You know, he's not a defensive guy, so you put him with Carmelo Anthony, and therefore you don't have a good defense when two of your five starters can't play. So I guess I'm not surprised they are where they are, but I am. I mean, like, come on. It's about time. The NBA needs the Knicks to be relevant. And it's just too many years we haven't seen it.
By the way, the commissioner was there the other night. He must have been pretty proud of what he saw over near the basket, huh?
Unbelievable. Well, I you know, we need to get Johnny McEnroe. He's the one that knows. He was sitting two seats from Dolan.
I know.
He knows. We put an APB out for Mac. I want to know what was said. Because if Charles Ogie was sitting there and not saying anything, and those guys came up to him like that, he had a right to be upset. He didn't have a right to do what he did, putting his hands on him. But if he didn't say anything, you don't need to make a scene like that. There's no need for that.
You know, it's and again, I think you and I probably think that the truth of what brought this about is somewhere between Oak's version and the Knicks version.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And did he likely say something? Yeah. Is Dolan probably a little paranoid that Oak, who has had so many bad things to say about him, was that close to him? Yeah. It was a perfect storm. And, you know, we've all watched Oak's career. And, you know, I used to write about Oak that he thought that the court extended to the first two rows of the stands. That's the way, you know. And so it was ironic that once again, he ended up on the floor next to a basketball court, except he wasn't chasing a loose ball this time.
No, but... I find it hard to believe that he randomly bought a ticket that happened to be 8 feet from James Dolan.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's kind of odd. Quite a coincidence.
We're talking to my friend John Barry on the Mike Lupica podcast. John, what did you think when the Knicks hired Phil? Because I honestly believe, and everything I know about that negotiation, Phil was just looking for like a $2 million a year consulting job, okay? And all of a sudden, they threw the whole store at him, okay? And literally made him an offer he could not refuse. And nobody, I kind of did, nobody said, wait a minute, he's a rookie executive now at the age of 69, and what I always say about Carmelo, and we can debate Carmelo's strengths and weaknesses to a fairly well, okay? Carmelo's way better at what he does right now than Phil is at what he does.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think the first thing I saw is when he was in Montana and there was stuff going on. This was right when he got the job, and there, I think there were maybe combines in Chicago or something, and he was like, I'm staying in Montana.
Right. Right.
Like, what a great way to start off your job when, you know, your whole job of doing this is to be out looking for talent and working. Like, you need to work. And I don't know that the time is put in of doing that. And he's a stubborn guy. He still wants this triangle. And I think that's part of the reason, too, the Knicks are floundering, because they do run, sometimes they run the triangle, and guys aren't comfortable. These guys look so indecisive to me that their offense is, it's a third random, it's a third triangle, and it's a third Carmelo Anthony. That's not working. And yeah, $12 million for Phil. I don't know. Maybe he's sending tweets out now just to maybe get fired and take his money and go back to Montana and disappear.
Oh, man, I don't think you're far off. I think he knows that the longer he stays now, you know, he just continues to do more damage to his brand. I'll tell you something else about Phil. And you know, this should be a default part of every conversation. Yes, he's one of the greatest coaches or managers we've ever had in American sports. Okay. He won what he won with Michael. He won what he won with Kobe and Shaq. And then even after Shaq was gone, all that. Okay. But John, take a look at like Larry Brown's coaching tree around this sport. College and the pros, okay? Look at the guys who work for Larry. Pop, Bill Self, John Calipari, Mark Turgeon at Florida, on and on and on. Where's Phil's coaching tree, okay? And I'll tell you something else. And it's under the ground. And I'll tell you something else. Nobody's rooting for him to do well, because he's always acted like, not only that he invented basketball, that he was way better than everybody else. And I don't think it helps you in a job like he's got right now. There's no relationships for this guy to cultivate.
Yeah, it's strange that none of his assistants have done well. To win 11 times, But to be so pompous about it, and I don't know. It's he's a strange guy to read. No one really knows much about him. Did you see Michael Graham's comments? The kid from Georgetown he was talking about.
Yeah,
he didn't lay back. I mean, he basically said his 2-year old could have coached those teams and won the championship. Let's take a step back. You can't have a 3-legged horse to win the Derby, but you still got to do something. You know, when you got Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, I mean, let's not take much away from Phil for that. But he's a different cat, and I think you're totally right. I think the longer this goes on, it is diminishing his brand, and maybe it turns from going to Carmelo to, man, this is Phil's fault since he got here.
Oh, I think we've made that. So when he got up to go help out Oak the other day, that seemed as engaged as he's been in about 3 months with the New York Knicks. So we're talking to John Barry. And here's the thing about the triangle. Hey, John, how come there's not 20 other teams running the triangle if it's the path to success? Yeah, the triangle worked great when he threw the ball to Michael or Kobe.
Right. Exactly. No, look, every other GM in the league would love it if they ran this. I mean, every other team ran it. I mean, like, it's a joke. It won't work. It's an outdated offense. You know, Bob Cousy dribbling with his right hand to go 50 feet to the right to go left wouldn't work in the NBA today. Like, you got to change it up.
See, this is why do I call you the Collinsworth of the NBA? This is why I call you the Collinsworth of the NBA. By the way, Frankie Isola pointed this out. He and I have been talking about this for a few days in the Daily News today. What the hell is Porzingis thinking as he's watching not only this play out, John, but this whole circus that he has joined by coming to the Knicks? Why would he want to throw down with these people for the future?
Yeah, right. Why would any other free agents want to come here with what's going on? I mean, they got money to spend, I think, this summer. You know, Derrick Rose is up. You think Derrick Rose wants to come back? I would think not. Yeah, exactly. Porzingis. What is he? This guy, I think he's a franchise player. Do you agree that you could build a franchise around him?
Think about
Dirk Nowitzki when he first started. You remember how bad he was?
Yeah.
His rookie year? I swear, I remember we laughed at this guy. He was pathetic. Pathetic. Like, no way would you ever think this guy was even going to be in the league the next year. And look what he is. He's one of the greats of all time. I think Porzingis has that in him. I really do. But you're right. Why would he want to stay here and do it? I mean, this is a joke.
He's a unique, he really is. And, you know, we always throw this expression around, but because of his size and because of his skill set, I think he's a more athletic Dirk. He really is an unusual player. Do you think, by the way, I had Larry Brown on the podcast about a month ago. He thinks they ought to play him at center.
Why not? He's a tough guard. I mean, if you put any center on him, they have to come out to the 3-point line. He has the ability to go around. He crossed up Blake Griffin the other night and had a step back 18-foot jump shot. Like, he's got it all. He's 21. He's played a couple years. I mean, I think the sky's the limit. There's no question. A little bit of lower body strength, and there's nothing that this guy won't be able to do. I love the way he attacks the defensive. He goes after shot blocks. He plays hard. He just needs to learn to quit fouling. He leads the league in fouls. He's got to be a little bit smarter with that. But I think he's a franchise-type guy. I really do.
And you think about what he would be like playing in a – and nothing against Jeff Hornacek. He's like a nice boy on his way to school, and he crossed through the Knicks neighborhood, and they stole his lunch money and his – But can you imagine what this kid Porzingis would be like playing for a guy I think is a basketball genius like Brad Stevens?
Oh, man. Yeah, it'd be fun to have an offense that's tailored for him. I don't think that he's ever going to be able to reach his potential with Carmelo around. And, you know, it's not Carmelo's fault. Carmelo, as we said, he is what he is. He's a one-on-one player. He's a ball stopper. And it's not going to happen for Porzingis until he's gone, until he really shows us what he is capable of doing.
And, you know, it's interesting. You think we were talking about Mike Woodson before. I'm talking to John Barry on the Mike Lubica podcast. You look at the team he won 54 games with. You look back on it now and you think, wait, what the heck? I think it was what? Felton, JR, Tyson Chandler, Carmelo Anthony, Shumpert. And they ran away with it. Won a playoff series off the Celtics. And, you know, we're one Roy Hibbert block on Carmelo in game six from going back and playing game seven at the Garden in a year, by the way, when they would have then played the Heat, who they'd beaten three times during the regular season.
Wow, yeah, that's right. You know what? I did that game six at Indiana.
Oh, what a game that was. How great was that game?
That was great. And that was kind of, you know, a defining moment for Carmelo. I remember talking about it like, man, just find some way to win this game. That was a game that he needed to win, you know, to really solidify him as a true great Knick, anyway, for them to have some success. But yeah, that was kind of lightning in the bottle that year. Those guys all had like career year shooting, and they were just one on one and shot making guys. JR, you know, shot the ball well for to change things up for his career, and yeah, I mean, Woodson did a heck of a job.
John, before we get to the headliners in the NBA right now, the Warriors and the Cavs, let me just stay on Brad Stevens. I was talking to some basketball fans about him the other night, and my kids, my boys are all in their 20s now. I used to take them to the Final Four every year for like 15 years, and they became Brad Stevens fanboys, okay? And I'm walking down the street one day in New York City, and Zach, my youngest, sends me a text. He said, "Oh my God, Dad, the Celtics got Stevens." And my first reaction was, "Wait a minute, what free agent player named Stevens is available right now in pro basketball?" And then I realized that Danny Ainge, John, you got to admit, that was outside the box thinking, because I think the most of the sport thought that Brad Stevens might be a Butler forever, or at least until Mike Krzyzewski left Duke.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know what the connection was that Danny sought him out, but he is terrific. I mean, you talk about side out of bounds plays after timeouts, how calm and cool he is. That's what I love. I mean, he just, it seems like he's been doing this for 20 years in the NBA.
I know.
And guys,
is he 40? Is he 40?
Love that. What's that?
You would have loved playing for him. What is he, like 40 years old? I mean, he's like a baby.
But I love, the greatest thing, when you look at a coach for me, is that I know that if any situation that might arise in a game, that my head coach has thought about it, and he knows exactly what to do. And he seems like that type of guy. And
you know,
Van Gundy was that guy for me. You know, like any situation that might arise, and everybody looks at their coach, right? When something happens, the guy makes a crazy shot, and you got to call timeout, it's late in the game, and you look at your coach, and if you see panic in your coach's eyes, your team has no chance. But when you see a coach that knows exactly what to do, it instills great confidence in you, and it's great.
More with John Barry after this from Barracuda.
If you're familiar with cloud computing, you probably know that Amazon Web Services offers a complete set of secure compute, storage, application, and deployment services that help companies launch and scale their IT infrastructures while lowering costs. But did you know that you're still responsible for protecting your own AWS-based assets, meaning your applications and data, from advanced cyber threats? Protect your AWS with Barracuda Networks Advanced Firewall Solutions. Visit AWS Marketplace or Barracuda.com/AWS to learn more.
You know, there's no exact equivalency. So I'm not saying that Brad Stevens is going to win as much as Bill Belichick has. Okay. But what you're talking about is the thing that sets guys like Belichick apart. There's a documentary called Do Your Job about the end of the Patriots Seahawks Super Bowl. Okay. And you remember that game. Everybody's wondering why Belichick's not calling a timeout. Well, he talked about looking at the other sideline. Okay. And seeing a little disarray, and he said, "No, let them decide about their last time out." And then the play where Malcolm Butler intercepted the ball, John, they had worked on that like five or six times at Friday's practice because Butler couldn't quite get it right. And then when the Seahawks come out of the huddle that night, Butler says, "Wait a minute, that's the play we worked on Friday." And he really knew that they were going to throw the ball instead of hand it off to Marshawn Lynch. But that's what you're talking about with Brad Stevens, because, John, you know, taking those two Butler teams to the finals, especially the one after Gordon Hayward, those were two of the greatest college coaching jobs ever.
There's no doubt. I mean, again, when you have a coach that you know understands what's coming or has no panic, that's the greatest comfort, you know, security blanket you can have. And he has it, and he had it from day one. I think I did one of his first games, maybe 2 weeks into his career, and it was like I came out of the meeting before, and it was like I was so impressed with his demeanor and his calm and coolness on the bench. And you know, they're starting to play well. Boston. I mean, how about is anybody playing better than Isaiah Thomas?
Oh my God!
To Harden and Westbrook, this guy has been incredible.
You know what, John? I remember a game. You might even have done the game. Okay, you might have done the game where the Warriors came into Boston last season, not this season. Okay, and I think they played an overtime game. It was a life and death game. And no matter what, there were like three or four chances for the Celtics to win the game. And I kind of started to think, well, wait a minute, what's this kid doing? Because he wanted the ball every single time. And they ended up losing that night. But guess what? I was wrong and he was right, because this kid knew how much basketball he had inside of him.
Well, so is he good enough to be the best player on a team that can be a legitimate title contender? Because all the talk, right, is that, well, Boston doesn't have a go-to guy. Last year, remember, wasn't that all the talk?
Yep, 100%.
Okay, well, I don't know. He's pretty good in the fourth quarter. But, it, you know, I don't think it's about him being good enough as a superstar. I think it's about the other guys, that they don't have enough. He's good enough, the way he's playing, to be the best player on a team that can compete for a title. I'm not saying they're constructed that way now, but he is good enough. I don't care if he's 5'9" or whatever he is. He's good enough.
Oh, let me tell you what. I really believe, and I don't even know. You probably have a better sense of this, okay? They're one player away. I'm not sure what position that player would play, and it'll be interesting to see if Danny actually does something at the trade deadline, knowing that he's still reaping the benefits. John, has there ever been a worse trade in the history of the planet than the Nets made for Pierce and Garnett, because the Celtics are getting their number one pick this year?
No, that's one of the all-time worst. And what did Brooklyn do? Did they win one series, maybe? And the guys, they were dinosaurs. I mean, what are you thinking? Oh, God, that was dreadful.
All right, let's get to the main event, which we think will be the main event, unless one of these Wizards or Celtics or even Raptors rouse themselves against the Cavaliers. Let's start with LeBron. It strikes me, John, that he's not so much mad at his own team. He's mad at what the other team did. He's angry about the Warriors more than he's angry about what the Cavs don't have.
I don't think coming out and saying that we need a playmaker was totally honest. I mean, I think he was trying to light a spark under his team. Look, he needs it, but he needs a bumpy road, doesn't he? I mean, remember last year he went and worked out with Dwayne Wade in Miami while he was on the injury list? And he needs it bumpy. He needs people to start sending cryptic tweets and have people think he's talking about this when he's talking about that. He loves it this way. And by the way, since he's done that, he's averaging like 12 assists a game or something like this. Like, I mean, he's off the charts. I had him the other night. Him as a playmaker, there, when he decides to just be in that role, there's nobody better.
By the way, I don't know how you list the 10 best shots you've ever seen, but the shot he made against
Washington.
No. And by the way, it started with, and you guys talk about this all the time, and I don't think basketball fans talk about it. Has there ever been a better outletter that you've seen recently in the NBA than Kevin Love?
No, I mean, it was Wes Unseld and Kevin Love. I mean, those are the two guys you talk about, right?
But that shot he made against the Wizards is as great a shot as I've ever seen. And he does that on a routine basis, this guy.
I sat there, I was with my sons, and I said, as soon as that pass went over there, I said, grab him right now. As soon as he catches it, grab him. Don't even let him dribble. You're up three. Wouldn't you foul?
I would foul up three.
I would foul. And look, Van Gundy had the best, you know, analogy of the fouling as opposed to letting one lucky shot go in to tie you. Four things have to happen if you foul. One thing has to happen if he makes a lucky shot, right? So four things. They have to make the first free throw. They have to miss the second, rebound it, and then score. So I'll take my chances that four things don't happen as opposed to one lucky shot.
And Love's pass wasn't as good as the shot, but it was pretty damn good, wasn't it?
It was good. I mean, but where was the guy on the inbound? You can't allow a chest. He threw a chest pass.
He flicked it. He threw a flick chest pass, what, about 75 feet?
Probably 75 feet, yeah. I mean, he played great. That was one of the great games I've seen in a long time. That was fantastic. Is Washington for real? Playing pretty good. They don't have much of a bench, but they're pretty good.
John Wall's terrific, John. He's a terrific
really
player,
good.
And he plays hard every night. We're talking to John Barry on the Mike Lubega podcast. Please remember, keep subscribing. This thing grows every single week. Leave comments. Yeah, if you want to leave nasty comments in the comment section, don't do it about me. Barry said several mean things today, and I actually think much meaner than I've said. So leave them about John Barry. By the way, before we get back to the NBA, before we get back to your office, were you rooting for the Falcons on Sunday night?
Semi. I have some friends in Vegas that I made a call and had a few things going on. But, I was at a party in Atlanta. I live in Atlanta. So it was a lot of people were very upset with me and a friend of mine who were kind of cheering for just a lot of scores. You know, I just wanted a fun game, a lot of scoring.
Yeah, we get the picture.
You
don't have to draw us a picture. By the way, I said to Mitch Albom afterwards the next day, I said this, but it's things like that that reminds you why you care about sports. I mean, and Brady, oh my God. I mean, he's 6 months short of his 40th birthday, John. He's the greatest damn football player ever. And it's 28-9, and you think, then it's 28-12, and then the play that changed everything was the 3rd-and-1 deep drop. Hightower sacks him, not only sacks him, but gets a fumble. And now it's 28-20, and you're thinking, holy shit, this is happening, and it's it's real. And by the way, I don't know what you think about this. Then the Falcons, in addition to everything else, were victimized by the single dumbest rule in the history of sports, the overtime rule in the playoffs in the NFL, where a coin flip. Can keep the MVP, it happened to Rodgers 2 years ago, this time it only happened in the Super Bowl, can keep the MVP of your league as a spectator because of something his defense does. John, it's totally unjust.
Why don't they do the college? The college from the 25 is as exciting as a thing there is. It's great.
But you know what, John? How about just play a 10-minute quarter, but you've got to let both. And here's the thing. It's the last game of the season. Where's anybody going? It's not like they have to get off the air for the next game. There's no next game until September.
I mean, look, everything that had to happen for New England happened. The strip sack fumble, you get that, obviously. The coin toss, to win the coin toss, they had to have that. 2 2-point conversions. Atlanta runs the ball 4 times the whole second half. I mean, they're sick. It was everybody's in mourning down there in Atlanta. There's no question.
And then they get down to the 22, and all they need is a field goal. The game's over, and he keeps throwing. No, we're talking to John Barry on the Mike Lubega podcast. All right, let's go to the Bay Area. If these two teams, their personnel remains the same, the Cavs and the Warriors, can the Cavs defend their title?
I don't think so. And it's really not anything against the Cavs. I love Korver getting picked up there. I think they're very capable of winning some games in the series. I think a lot of people are resigned to the fact it could be a 4 or 5-game series, which I don't see. But, man, the Warriors their defense, no one talks about it. They put up so many points, but their defense, if you look at all the numbers and the efficiency things, it's number one in the league. A lot of the numbers are skewed because they don't play fourth quarters. They're starting units. to add, like, basically, Kevin Durant is taking the place of Harrison Barnes. Right? I mean, you lose Bogut, which he was a defensive presence, there's no question, and they lost him for some of those finals games, so they didn't even have him. But Harrison Barnes last year, get this, I remember I was doing radio for the finals. He was 2 for his last 23 in game 6 and 7. And the Warriors lost what, game 7 by 3 points or whatever. He was 2 for 23, and I'm talking about stone cold open looks. I believe he was like 1 for 16 from the 3-point line in the last two games.
Oh, he turned into John Starks against the Rockets that year for the Knicks.
He went Starks on us, but now that's Kevin Durant. I mean, what? I don't know how you can possibly stop this team. I just don't think it can happen.
Okay, so you're the general manager. You're Griffin in Cleveland, okay? And something presents itself to you that doesn't send you $47 bazillion more over the cap, okay? Mm-hmm. What's the thing? Is it really a point guard? What's the thing you're trying to add to LeBron's side?
Honestly, I don't know what it's going to be. What could do it? Thompson's a guy that does a lot of things that are very important. You have a big man in Fry that you can play that can extend the floor to create more spacing and knock down threes. I mean, you've got Love. Irving now basically is the go-to guy at the end of games if you need a basket. You know, Shumpert's more of a defensive guy who happens to be shooting the ball well this year. He's over 40% from three, which is well above his career high.
A lot.
So they have a myriad of lineups that they can play. They can play a defensive unit. They can play an all offensive unit. They can play big. They can play small. So I'm not seeing that there's another piece out there that puts this team to another level. I think they're as good as they're going to get.
John, I've been searching my mind, and again, my first job in New York was covering the Knicks when I got to town. Can you remember a more apocalyptic technical foul, flagrant foul, than Draymond Green got against the Cavs last year? Because, John, that changed basketball history. Because I honestly believe, and I think you do too, that if he plays in that game, the Warriors are going for 3 in a row right now.
Yeah, it's over in game 5. There's no question. My problem with the whole flagrant foul is it's so arbitrary for the NBA on the suspensions, because the bottom line is this. What he did to Steven Adams was far, far worse than what happened with LeBron James. Would you agree?
Yes. But it's like points close. Against your drive. But isn't it like points against your driver's license?
Well, yeah. But that's not why he was suspended for the last one, was it? Because he went over the points?
He had been told, I forget how it played out at the time. I just wrote a column about it the other day. But, you know, I got a lot going on. But I think it was one more flagrant and he was suspended. That's why I think I don't know whether it was the playoff number or if it was the regular season number.
All right. Well, if that was the case, the bottom line is they always go back and review. And so he didn't get a flagrant foul for the Adams one and he wasn't suspended. Only because his team was down 3-1 in the series. Had the Warriors been up 3-1, he's suspended with the Adams thing, is he not?
Yeah, I think they would have banged him at that point.
And right, no doubt. They were down 3-1, so they figured series is probably over. Let's try to get some more game. I mean, let him play. And then on the flip side, they're in the finals, they're up 3-1. And he gets suspended because they figure, we'll extend it, get some more games, and they'll still win it anyway. So that's my problem with the whole thing, is that it's too arbitrary. There's no black and white on flagrant fouls. And I understand it's not the easiest thing in the world, but the suspensions that come raining down they're hit or miss, and I don't think it's correct.
But in a lot of ways, and again, there's no equivalencies, okay? But he's kind of the Rodman of that team. And by the way, you know, Rodman is such a pejorative expression. You think, oh, that's a bad thing. John, you know this. Rodman was one of the great players. I mean, what did he win? Five rings?
What, two with Detroit? Five?
Here's the deal. I'm referencing myself, so you know it can't be wrong, okay? So after he caught Steven Adams of the Thunder with a below-the-belt shot when it was Warriors against the Thunder in the Western Conference Finals, he was up against it with the league with the flagrant points he had accumulated, and one more meant a one-game suspension. So basically, Green knew that the league was basically saying, Draymond, don't do, it's like with your kids, John, don't do one more thing or you're going to get grounded. Okay. And then he went ahead and did one more thing. And whether it wasn't an Adams shot, that's irrelevant. He knew he had to behave himself and didn't. Mm-hmm. But John, he turned that game on almost into like game seven. Once they didn't win there, you just felt, didn't you have a bad feeling for the Warriors?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and the feeling after game four, when Golden State won at Cleveland, if you looked at the Cleveland Cavaliers, you would have bet your house that it was all she wrote. The heads were down, they moped off the floor, and it was over. And then they get the news that Draymond Green is out, and it completely changed the whole series. I think you can draw a comparison to Grayson Allen. I mean, there's got to be something that they can't control in a competitive environment when they're just, look, I get it, man. You become somebody else. Some people do when they compete and they're out on the floor and you're out of your mind at times. And, you know, these two guys are pretty similar in that, I think.
We're talking to John Barry on the Mike Lupica podcast. Is there somebody, if you had to pick somebody in the East who could sidetrack something we never even got with Larry and Magic in them back in the 80s, which is three finals in a row. Would it be the Wiz? Would it be the Celtics? Would it be the Raptors? I don't think anybody else would be in that conversation, right?
Yeah, I can't think of anybody that beats Cleveland four times. I mean, I think if you really look at the matchups, Washington's played them better than anybody.
Yeah, they have.
Four times. See, regular season matchups, and then when you get into a playoff series, it's such a different animal. And the focus, and I mean, four times to beat LeBron James, I don't see a team in the East that is capable of doing that. I really don't.
By the way, how about, and I believe it's completely well-intentioned and good business, how about the NBA sending out a memo discouraging Twitter wars between their players? John, that's going to work, right?
Oh, yeah. That's great. I don't get into that. I mean, I guess I'm getting old, but I'm not a Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram guy. I can't do it.
John, is it good or bad for your sport that we are assuming that Cavs Warriors 3 is a foregone conclusion? Is that good or bad for the sport? And does it make you take another look? You know, they thought they were spreading the wealth around with this new collective bargaining agreement, and all we've got are super teams.
Yeah, I want to see it again. I think it'd be great, but I don't think it's good, and I don't like the super teams. These guys matching up with each other is killing the league. I don't see how it can be a positive that we have legit. How many teams do you really think can win an NBA title? I mean, we can throw the Spurs in with Cleveland and Golden State. Can you throw another team in than that? Honestly?
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's
that's it.
Listen, everybody likes big teams in sports, okay? To me, what part of the appeal of the Super Bowl was that the Patriots were in it, okay? I've always said that the two biggest stories in sports are big guy wins or big guy loses, okay? So we all understand the appeal of that. But man, oh man, isn't it turning the regular season into a foregone conclusion?
Yeah, but look, football's one game, Mike. The NCAA tournament is one game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
how many times do we get upsets in the NBA playoffs? So rare, because you have to beat a team four times. That's why it doesn't work in the NBA. We need a bunch of good teams. Hopefully this new CBA agreement that we have is going to try to keep, I think it is going to keep these stars with their teams that it's going to be a lot harder for them to go because they have to turn down so much more money to stay with their team. But we can't have this. We can't. Durant going to the Warriors, they got four all-stars.
Right.
Four of 12 guys are on one team. I mean, that's not good.
No, and I actually think, and even though we would have been cheated out of one of the great finals of all time, it would have kind of been a good thing if Oklahoma City had knocked off the Warriors, except, you know, we turned them into Rocky last year, but Rocky in the NBA now was Durant and Westbrook.
Exactly.
That's your underdog team right there. I mean, listen,
of the top five players in the league.
Yeah, by the way, two guys will go into being two of the best players of all time. And so listen, now at this point, all you can root for is to see him do it one more time and see if LeBron can figure it out again. I still think, as great as the Warriors are, if you give me a choice, I'm going to watch the game in which LeBron James is playing basketball. John, can you think of anybody other than Magic who could have been an all-star at any of the five positions on the court?
To ever play?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, LeBron James. You know,
yeah.
Like, I've always said he's a combination of Magic and Michael, and he tends to be a little bit more of Magic, which is incredible. I mean, like I said, when he wants to be a playmaker, the shots he creates, I don't know if you saw a game. What was the game I had the other night? He threw a pass that he was going to his left, falling out of bounds. It was here in New York, Saturday night, New York.
Oh, right, right.
He's going, it's at the end of the game, it's relatively close. He's outside of the key on the left side of the basket, throws an over-the-head no-look pass to Kevin Love in the corner right in front of the Knick bench for a wide-open three. Passes right on the money.
Just, I remember the play, yeah.
It was incredible. I asked Kevin Love after the game, we had him in our interview, and I said, the shots that this guy creates, he goes, absolutely the best ever. It's just... I mean, he's Steve Nash. I don't want to say on steroids because then everybody will freak out. But he's just like a monster version of Steve Nash. He really is.
Michael was the main event for me. I saw Michael with my own eyes win his NCAA championship for North Carolina against Patrick and Georgetown that night. So and then all the way through his pro career. So Michael was the main event for me.
Mm-hmm.
But John, in my opinion, no player in history, and including Magic, has influenced more games in more positive ways than LeBron James does on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, I can't argue that. I mean, he's incredible. I mean, let's see. I want to go down like the Eastern Conference. If you put LeBron James on the Boston Celtics, are they the favorite to win?
100%.
Absolutely. Washington?
Yeah.
Toronto? Yeah. What about Atlanta? Mediocre team. If he was on that team, are they the favorite to win the East?
What about the LA Clips?
Yeah.
Against the Warriors with LeBron on their side?
Sure.
Man, yeah. The Clips are kind of the dog that just is doomed to chase the car, isn't it?
what are they going to do? I mean, like, isn't it time? Like... Bust it up. The Warriors, it's worse than a big brother and younger brother. They clown these guys. It's awful.
Well, John, listen, thank you for doing this. I'm sorry that you had to be snowbound in New York City for us to finally get to do this. But, man, you know this. You know I love your work. There's no other reason for me to tell you that except that it's true. If you're doing the game, I was so happy. Nothing against Jeff. I love Jeff. I've known Jeff for 100 years. I was so happy that you were there for Ultimate Fighting the other night at Madison Square Garden.
Well, it's much appreciated, and I respect your work, too, and sorry to hear that the sports reporters are no longer.
Oh, man, you know what? We never thought we'd run for 2 years. We didn't think we'd run for 28.
28's a pretty good run.
Pretty good run, and at the end of it, all you do is say a great line from Jimmy Breslin, thanks for the use of the hall. John, you be well. I'll be listening to you. I'll be watching you. And enjoy the rest of the season. And maybe we'll do this again if it is Warriors-Cavs 3 before the NBA Finals.
Love to. Anytime. And we got to get around to golf in too.
Yeah, but you got to give me a lot of strokes.
No problem.
Or do you think I'm trying to hustle you?
You might be, but I don't care. You need to come out to the Bay Area during the finals, and we'll go down to the old San Francisco Golf Club and play a little.
How about Olympic? I covered a U.S. Open there.
Too hard for you.
Shut up. Goodbye.
You can't hit a draw.
Goodbye. We're done. Goodbye. John Barry on the Mike Lubega podcast. Oh, my God. It just was a perfect week to have him on. He had literally and figuratively had a ringside seat the other night at Madison Square Garden. This is the kind of conversation we give you every single week. It's why our numbers grow and grow and grow. Talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.